HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 154, recorded live Thursday, March 19th, 2009. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RED Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode from Mix09, Scott talks with Chris Woods, a program manager on the mobile browser platform team.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm here at Mix09 talking to Chris Woods, a program manager on the mobile browse platform team. And something pretty cool happened at Mix when we were talking about mobile. They released something on CodePlex with the MSPL, which is our most permissive open source license. Chris, what did you guys release?
Well, we released the device database, basically a database of the top 500 devices that we see on Windows Live. And it provides a bunch of capabilities for those devices. It allows you to adaptively render content for mobile handsets.
So it's a database, but this is an app. This is an, what they call an app browser file. Is that right? Or a dot browser file?
Yeah, it's a dot browser file. It is a database that is effectively a glorified XML file. You drop it into ASP.NET, and ASP.NET will automatically pick it up and supply you with all the capabilities you need. It automatically parses this file for you, caches the results.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember years and years ago when I was doing mobile, there was this browser capabilities section of the web config, and it would get bigger and bigger and bigger. And the blogging engine that that I work on called DOSBlog ended up having a 256K or 300K web config because it was just full of this really strange format.
Yeah.
Then in ASP.NET 2, they introduced this notion of the dot browser file.
Yes, that's right. The dot browser file really superseded the web config.
Okay. So this is something I could drop in my site now.
Yeah.
And now, do I need a DLL to make this work, or are all of the existing kinds of things that I call gonna work?
Yeah, all the existing stuff that you've got works. There's no additional binary that's needed. You just simply drop the file into your app browsers folder.
And slash mobile, and then drop it in there.
Slash mobile, and you're all set. It just picks it up. Your app will refresh, and you'll have all the latest capabilities available to you in your ASP.NET page.
So you said the top 500. So like how many mobile devices are there out there?
Oh, there's thousands and thousands of devices.
Really?
But what we've done is tried to pick the most useful.
Mm-hmm. Well, the ones people are using, because if I understand, you actually picked this from usage. You didn't just make these up, but you said these are the top. These are the ones that visit us.
Yeah, so they reflect the most popular browsers or most popular mobile handsets that we see hitting Windows Live. Particularly, we look at the Hotmail usage figures. We can see who's using what, and these phones appear to be the most popular right now.
Mm-hmm. And are we talking 70% of the market? Like we can cover 70% or like 90%? I mean, I'm looking ballpark.
Ballpark, you're looking around 80, 85%.
Really? Okay. So we can get a pretty good sense of these things. Now, there's a number of different levels of what I would care about when I'm doing mobile. At the simplest level, there's just, is it a mobile browser or not?
Yes.
So I could say something like, you know, if request.browser.is mobile, do this, otherwise do that.
Yeah, this that'd be the first sort of level of customization that you could apply.
Mm-hmm.
But we supply actually 67 different capabilities that you can query about the incoming request.
67 capabilities.
67.
Okay, so what are some examples of capabilities?
You can find out if it's a touchscreen device. You can find out some CSS support information. You can find out what image files it supports, what codecs, video codecs, audio codecs the device will support.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a photo site, you could adaptively render photos or pick the appropriate format. If you're trying to sell MP3s to a mobile phone, you'd be able to work out, well, hey, it doesn't support MP3s, but it supports AAC instead.
Oh, so that's a really interesting example that you just gave of a gallery. So let's say I've got a Flickr-like site. I've got a gallery and I've got a bunch of files, but let's say that I'm storing them as PNGs.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a phone today. Someone showed me a mobile phone and I tried to have them test a mobile site that I was working on. And it turns out that their phone didn't support PNGs.
Yeah, there's a surprising number of relatively advanced handsets that you see out there today that actually don't support PNGs at all.
Hmm. Yeah, they got a broken image icon.
Yeah, and that's not a great user experience. So with our device data, you'd know ahead of time, this phone doesn't support a PNG,
mm-hmm.
And you've got you got a couple of choices. You could try and re-encode the file on the fly. Mm-hmm. That might not be proficient enough. You might have pre-cached versions of these images right. floating about. You could pick one of those instead. Mm-hmm. But what we aim to do is provide you as the web developer enough information that you can customize your site based on what you need.
Now, one of the things that I noticed when I was looking through the list of capabilities, like there's 67 of them, was that there's a lot of granularity, but it's not like it's not exhaustive in the sense of it's not telling me a bunch of stuff I wouldn't want to know. Mm-hmm. An example would be like, support CSS. That's kind of an obvious thing to ask. But yeah. one of them was supports the CSS background color property. So you're actually telling me if the phone supported this one specific CSS rule.
Yes.
Because that's a rule I would very likely care about.
Yeah. So there is, what we've tried to do is, internally we have the 67 capabilities, but we've tried to pick 67 capabilities that would mean something to a web developer. There's other factors you could have in there. For instance, does it support WML? A lot of modern handsets can support WML as mm-hmm. a legacy, a throwback, but there's no use to most modern websites who wouldn't use that anyway.
Now, when I was doing mobile in banking years ago, we were talking to partners about re-encoding, and we would use terms like WAP gateways and WML and WML this version of WML. And it was really quite a miserable experience. I almost feel like I blinked and that just disappeared. Is that a non-issue or is that just a non-issue in the Western world?
What we're seeing is that the most well-used handsets are the ones that have a good browse experience on mm-hmm. them. So we're looking at the top 500 devices. You'd see the majority of those would have HTML support of some kind. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, HTML support varies widely. Between browsers anywhere, and particularly so in the mobile sphere, where browsers will often say that they support web standards but really don't, or mm-hmm. even the same browser on a different handset will behave slightly differently.
Really?
Yeah, you often find that, for instance, Access, a Chinese company, they produce a browser, mobile browser, and as a device manufacturer roll out a new handset, they will customize that browser for that handset. So if I'm pulling out a new mobile phone and it's got haptic support and vibrates when I touch it and I want a great touch feel, mm-hmm. I'll alter the code base of the browser to make it smoother, slicker, give me mm-hmm. a better user experience. I just picked Access as an example, but
right.
They may not do it. It's just to give you a feel.
This makes me feel like that we're still in an area, we're still in a place right now with mobile that we're going to be chasing our tails to get 100%. I mean, you're not ever going to hit an awesome, awesome experience on every single device.
That's a very tall order. It really is. What we're seeing in our experience is that there is a consolidation, and the market is consolidating in a bunch of handsets and browsers, mobile browsers that provide great, just a great, great web browse experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's not going to be possible to get 100% all the time. There's always the long tail.
Yeah.
But that long tail's getting shorter effectively as people consolidate.
Well, when you guys kind of contacted me a couple of days ago and you gave me this file a day or two before it started out, I had been preparing a talk for about Nerd Dinner. Nerd Dinner is a website I've got that lets nerds have dinner together. And I said, oh, wait a second. This is going to be cool. I can make a mobile version. So mm-hmm. I sat down and I took your file.
Yeah.
I drug it into app browser /mobile.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm using MVC, although you could use this on MVC or you can use this on web forms. And I basically wrote code that said, if it's a mobile browser, look for a view here in /mobile. Otherwise, look there. So I just started with what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I called it tiny HTML.
Yeah.
And it was just the simplest possible thing that would work. It was like input box, button, and then unordered list.
Oh, that's really interesting because customizing for a mobile handset or any mobile experience isn't just about reformatting the page so it looks good.
Mm-hmm.
The user experience on a phone is different. People do different things with a mobile phone.
Mm.
So why am I wanting to go check Nerd Dinner out when I'm out and about with a mobile phone?
Well, now you're questioning the whole reason to put it on mobile. But an example would be that we had a Nerd Dinner on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And a guy was walking to the dinner
uh-huh.
and couldn't remember where it was.
Exactly. So there's a slightly different use case.
Which is interesting because I thought he'd want to search for them.
Uh-huh.
He wanted to get directions, which I hadn't even thought about.
Yeah.
So I sent him to a page that showed an address,
uh-huh.
But that didn't do him any good.
Yeah.
So then one of your guys that was helping me out with this said, well, why don't you link the address to a mobile version of a map site?
Exactly.
So I ended up linking him to the mobile version of live.com, uh-huh. where then he could find his way to the thing.
Excellent.
And then another guy said, well, I saw your phone number there, but I couldn't click on it.
Yeah.
So then I made that a link that they could click on that would cause the phone to call out.
Yeah, click to call link. Yeah.
Exactly. So all those things started making me realize that I literally thought I was downporting my desktop application.
You know, I think that's just most people think downporting is what you're doing, and that's not it at all. You're customizing for this mobile experience and really taking advantage of what a phone provides. Mm-hmm. It's in my pocket all the time. I have it with me. So the scenarios are slightly different. Mm-hmm. How do I get to where I need to go? It's a very common scenario. And then it's, well, how do I speed that up? Because every click on a mobile phone takes a long time. Mobile data connections are still quite clunky. Mm-hmm. So minimize the clicks and give me the data fast.
Right. That's interesting. And one of the things that's frustrating is that a guy with a phone that had a GPS visited nerddinner.com, mm-hmm. and it introduces him to a box that says where and a button. And he says, well, my phone knows where I am.
Yeah.
Why can't your application figure that out? And I don't know the state of geolocation and browsers and stuff. So I was like, well, maybe there's some JavaScript I could call. I mean, are we getting that stuff straightened out yet?
Yes. I mean, there's some great W3 standards right now, which is going through the pipes that are going to provide web developers with JavaScript access to location information. So there's some really great location stuff coming through in the pipeline. Mm-hmm. It's not there quite yet. Okay.
But soon I'm going to be able to fill out that box for him, you think?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing that I thought was interesting that I'm still getting my head around is that the live site uses a very interactive, scrollable virtual Earth map. Mm-hmm. But then the mobile one, I haven't figured out yet how to request a static version of the map.
Really?
I know that it's possible, but it also changed the interaction model, because in the live site, you interact with the map. Uh-huh. And on the mobile one, I would just really want to generate a graphic of a map.
Yes.
So and then send that down.
It's exactly slightly different use of the same technology.
So I'm going to continue to kind of add on to that. But so far, I've made an iPhone version, a Windows mobile version, and then kind of an other.
Yeah.
Where other is as simple as possible.
Yeah, I've seen it running on my N95. It was pretty.
So you got a Nokia.
Yeah.
Right, and that worked okay?
It did, yeah.
Now, one of the things that was interesting was that I put it up on the Wind Mobile, and mm-hmm. I called a guy who had a Wind Mobile. I said, check this out. And he ended up with a scroll bar that went horizontally. Way, 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 way off in the corner. And my buttons were incredibly wide and everything like that. And he said, well, there's this notion of a viewport. What's the deal with this viewport meta information? So it turns out that there is a series of meta tags you can put on a mobile device that they listen to. This exists inside of your head. That says the portion of the view that I want you to show and the area where scroll bars should start and stop is here. This is where your file came into place.
Yep.
So I got to say request.browser, and then I could treat it as a dictionary.
Oh, yeah.
And say screen width.
Yes.
Or screen height. And this particular device was a 320 by 240. Uh-huh. So I was able to dynamically write out this viewport information, and I took my existing view, my ASPX page, and now I didn't have to make another whole view.
Yeah.
And this was a really important thing. I thought I was going to have to pick 5, 10, 12 phones and make a bunch of views and test a bunch of views.
Yeah.
Turns out that default view can be made richer by doing a couple of, not necessarily conditionals, but by saying, hey, if you know your width and height, I can help make things better.
Excellent, yeah. And that's a great use of the data that we provide.
Okay, so that's how you intend that kind of thing to be
used?
Yeah,
and we also supply not just the screen width and height, but we also supply the available browse width and height. It's slightly different because we take into account that some browsers, for instance, and some handsets will put in a title bar at the top, which consumes some space.
You know, that's interesting because by default, I ended up with just a little bit of a vertical scroll bar.
There we go.
I need to switch that to available.
Yeah.
Width. How do you collect all of this? I mean, do you just have a bunch of monkeys, a lot of phones? I mean, that's a lot. It's a ridiculous amount of data.
It is a huge amount of data, and we collect it from various sources. So we have, we take data in from Werfel. We take data.
So what, are you the second person to mention Werfel to mm-hmm. me today?
Yeah.
So talk to me about what that is.
Okay, so Werfel is an open source supplier of device data information. And it has thousands of devices listed on it. And that information is freely available to anybody. You can come along and pick it up and use it. We consume that. What we've found, though, is that in our experience, some of the data that's in there hasn't been as accurate as it could be, just been entered wrong, or somebody's taken a guess on some capability values. We combine that in a database internally with data from UA profile. So device manufacturers, when they release a new device, put up an XML schema which describes what that device is and its browse capabilities.
Mm-hmm. So UA profile means user agent profile.
That's data. Right, yeah. And as a device makes a request to a web server, it includes the link, the URL, to where you can find that UA profile, that XML file.
And where is that? Is that in the header?
That's in the HTTP header, yeah.
Really? Mm. So mobile devices, or all of them, are good ones?
Good ones, yeah.
So good ones include data about themselves.
Yes.
So then you can find that when you log the headers and go look and say, well, I've never seen this phone before.
Yeah, so we log headers from Windows Live, and mm-hmm. we can see the UA profiles that come in. We take that UA profile. Mm-hmm. We go along and get that information and put that into a database. I mean, obviously, you could, if you really wanted to, go away and make a request at the time you get the request in from the handset. Make that request to the URL, pull down the XML, and pass it. But it's just not...
Yeah, that wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah, you'd just be wasting time.
It's not practical,
time. Yeah. As an academic exercise, it might be interesting, mm-hmm. but not practical.
So it's cool. So you're consuming information from this one open source project, combining it with data of your own from various sources, and then releasing it again as open source.
Yeah, and we also get input from carriers. Some of the operators will come into us and say, hey, we're releasing a new device. Mm-hmm. We would love Hotmail to work well on it. Mm-hmm. We'd love WAP-IM to work well on it. So we go away and try and customize for that.
Now, I bumped into a very interesting edge case that I think is not necessarily completely interesting as an edge case, but interesting because it's representative of the kind of things that are going on under the covers. I was trying to use the W3C validator to find out about my desktop site,
uh-huh.
Which is an XHTML strict site. But the validator said I was XHTML basic.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, that's strange. The only thing I have that's XHTML basic is my mobile site. Well, it turns out that one of the devices, I think it's a Nokia 606,
yep.
happens to use a very greedy regular expression that basically says if the number 606 appears anywhere in the user agent,
yes.
that's a Nokia. Well, a couple of days ago, apparently, the W3C validator got revved to version 1.0.606.
Uh-oh.
So now the validator shows up as a Nokia device. I think that's a really interesting problem because you have to find some aspect of the signature, the fingerprint that you can identify. That's a Nokia. That's a, you know, Samsung.
Yes. So the .browser file itself is made up of regular expressions, like mm-hmm. you were saying.
Right.
And it's a node base. It's a tree structure.
Right.
So based on the outcome of a regular expression determines what way you flow down that path.
Mm-hmm.
And by building this up, we have this set of capabilities. So we're able to determine We can determine first on the handset and then on the browser.
Right.
So it could be a Windows mobile device that's running Opera or a Windows mobile device that's running IE. Mm-hmm. So we'd have the base set of capabilities for the screen width and height, because that's not going to change.
Right.
But the browser characteristics will change.
Yeah.
So we can build it up. And we use the UA string as the key for this because it contains both pieces of information.
Right.
We'd love to say that we're 100% accurate all the time.
Yeah.
But we're not. I mean, it's a tough job.
Well, it's a tough job because you naively one would think that, oh, well, this is just a key in a hash table somewhere.
Yeah.
But UA strings are free form. People have tried to say, well, here's the segment for platform and here's the segment for this. And then now they've become, parentheticals inside of parentheticals with, semicolon delimited pairs.
Yeah.
That's quite a bit of mess to parse.
It is. And one of the interesting things that we found also is that web crawlers have started to identify themselves as mobile because, hey, I can crawl the web and I'm not getting as much data back.
Oh, no.
So that too poses some interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting because I, in my downporting exercise, present, possibly less information.
Yeah.
So if a web crawler starts showing up and they inadvertently get that, that's going to be an interesting thing. And here I am now sniffing to give the user the best experience, but I've just realized that I don't know what Google or Live or Ask.com is going to see.
Yeah.
When they show up. So that means that I need to do testing using known user agent strings of popular spiders.
Mm-hmm.
which I'm sure that you do.
Yes, we do.
But this is kind of a, it sounds like a mobile best practice.
Yes. Yeah. So we have some very strict constraints around what we put into this file, and we make a good effort to make sure we don't include or we deliberately exclude the crawlers.
What do you think a best practice is with regard to the subdomains? It seems that kind of spontaneously the world has decided that m.whatever.com is a good way to get to a mobile site.
Well, that's an interesting question, because I just had a conversation with .mobi, who have the .mobi extension, and they would rather...
So they're like a people?
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
They're a group, a consortium?
Yeah, they're a company. They're also based in Dublin.
Oh, really?
So they manage the .mobi top-level domain.
Dublin, Ireland, not Dublin, Ohio.
Yeah, Dublin, Ireland. Okay. So they manage the .mobi domain, and they would rather that you used...
Really? I wonder why.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I think the m.whatever.com is just such an elegant way to do things.
Well, you know, testing in-house, one of the most annoying things we've found is you create a website and you need to test it in a bunch of devices. Just typing in the URL in the T9 keyboard can be a bit tiresome, especially if you have to do it 50 times in different handsets. So, you know, tiny URLs come in really handy for that.
Really? I've been wondering that if I should have m.nerddinner.com or www.
Well, it's interesting because you'd expect your mobile users to know that they should go to m. Or would you automatically redirect?
So this is an interesting question, and I think this is a Windows Mobile has this quote unquote problem, and the iPhone does too, where they are on a strong device, they are on a mini computer, and often they know that. So they're going to be more likely to hit www.something.com.
Yeah.
I'm noticing more and more sites that are detecting and forcing the user to a particular experience.
Yes.
Myself included. Uh-huh. And I'm realizing that I haven't figured out quite what the best practice is, if I should have at the bottom of my site view in standard, view in mobile. Because right now, if an iPhone hits my site, they're stuck.
Yes.
They're locked down. And I will not show them the desktop.
Yep.
Well, on Windows Windows Mobile, there's an option to say, I am a desktop browser, and you get the full IE experience, or I'm a pocket browser, which is a little more intuitive from a developer's perspective, but not something I think my mom would really care about.
No. And, you know, this all boils down to what is the user experience, not just the rendered content. What do you want to provide your user when he's using it on she's using it on a mobile phone? That's the real key.
Well, it's like, what do they want to do?
Yeah.
Like, from my point of view, on a Nerd Dinner side, I don't think hosting a Nerd Dinner, like the actual initiation of the hosting of the dinner, is an appropriate mobile thing.
Yeah.
So that makes me wonder, on the Hotmail side, what are some things that you've decided are not something that someone would want to do?
So that would really be a question for the Hotmail team, but I can give you some insights.
I realize you're not the Hotmail team.
Yeah.
The Hotmail kind of canonical example.
Well, Hotmail's our sister team, and they do sit beside us. And
Or maybe some other mobile sites that you think where someone has said, you know, this is not the kind of thing that a mobile user would want to do, or the experience can't be good.
Yeah.
By virtue of the fact that it's mobile.
Well, you know, what's really interesting is the Twitter site. You check that out on
the mobile Twitter site?
Mobile Twitter site.
Yeah.
So it provides some really good, really strong scenarios for mobile stuff. So I can read messages really quickly, and I can create a new message, but I can't search.
Yep.
Which sucks.
And you couldn't do replies for the longest time.
Yeah.
Which was
so
just
frustrating.
For mobile people, a lot of mobile people are not using Twitter apps yet, you know.
Yeah.
They find the site is so lightweight, and they're like, come on, it's been a year. Can we look at our replies?
Yes, exactly.
And now, of course, we have replies, and now we want search.
Yeah.
There must be some technical reason for not doing that, though, or the experience can't be a good one.
Well, perhaps they've just not completed the experience. But in general, what we've found for mobile scenarios is the input method on a mobile phone right now isn't great. Even on the iPhone, you're not going to write an essay using that touchscreen. It's a good user experience, but it's nothing you're going to sit and write a War and Peace on.
Right. So, and also tabbing between things, touching to move between fields is difficult.
Yes. So what people are using the phones for is reading and consuming content and trying to quickly access that content. So that's more important than being able to input long messages. So Twitter's great because you're constrained by the text message length information. So it's a good fit for a mobile phone. But what I'm interested in when I go to Twitter would probably be I want to read my messages. I want to quickly search my messages, and I don't want to have to type because typing is painful. So the less number of clicks I've got, the better.
Yeah.
And if I've got to do a web refresh or a full page refresh, that's bad. It's painful because the data connection is going to be slow, and I'm going to wait for the reply. And, you know, I'm on a mobile phone. I'm in a rush. I'm stuck in traffic. I'm trying to get to another dinner. I don't know where it is. And I'm trying to type on a keyboard.
Yeah. Well, certainly I don't know why you're texting while driving. But.
Oh, well, obviously I would never do that.
You know, it's one of the things also that's interesting is these interactions with what the expectation is when I click on a link. I know there's a lot of people who feel very strongly that they don't like that the iPhone will intercept a link to Google Maps, drop you out of the browser and into Google Maps.
Yeah.
So they actually see that. So some people would say, you know, the pragmatist might say, well, this is a great experience. That's what the user would expect. While a purist might say, no, we should be going to a tiny map site and they should be given the choice. And then also these TEL:// links where someone can say, well, I want to make a call.
Yeah, click to call links.
Is that a standard or did someone just decide one day that TEL:// or call to was going to be something? Because it's not a protocol.
It is a mobile standard, so you will see that.
Okay, so someone decided that?
Yeah.
Are these things always decided? Does someone just come out and do it?
I think it's probably general agreement.
So it's de facto standard.
Yeah. So the click to call stuff's just so useful. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the old Nokia browsers on Series 40, for instance, would try to pre-pass the website and work out. Look, there's a string of numbers. It's probably a telephone number.
Right. Your account number for your bank. You can now call them.
Yeah, exactly. That's really useful. So why don't I introduce the tel tag? So it's Ahref tel, and then your mobile number or whatever number you want.
Right.
And you can have a name associated with it now. So I can say, Scott, call Scott. Click this button.
Really? How do you do that?
Well, it's just use your A tag, Ahref tel, put it in, and then there's a label for the tel you put in.
Oh, so the label, okay.
So it doesn't have to be a number shown on the screen. It can be a person's name or
the
restaurant that you're going to meet at.
Or. Are there any other ones? Other ones like SMS colon or something like that?
I think there is, yeah.
Huh. Now, where can people find this information? Because I'm not a mobile expert, but if I want to start getting better at this, do I just spend time at the W3C? Is that the spot?
I would recommend starting there, yes. They have, W3C has some great mobile recommendations, best practices for web development. That'd be a great starting place. But really, once you've got the basics down and you know the rough standards that are out there, the real key is this user scenario, because these clicks take forever.
Really?
Take them away.
So really focusing on the experience, not downporting it as I have, but thinking about how will they interact with this and how can I save them clicks?
Yeah. And the material you see on the web mainly concentrates on, well, let's really think about a seamless user interface, and making this really slick, really smooth, and a couple of very good key scenarios. And I think that's something you see Apple do a lot in their products. There's one way to do something, and they do it really well. But if you wanted to add options and change things, or it's not quite the way you want to do it, it often doesn't work out so good.
So where can I go on CodePlex to get this?
mdbf.codeplex.com.
MDBF, so it's the mobile browser data file.
Yeah.
mdbf.codeplex.com.
I hope so.
And we can get that right now, and we can bring that into our applications. And I'm going to put a post up that'll be up by the time you're listening to this show explaining how to use this on MVC. And I'm sure there'll be some samples out there for web forms as well to explain how to use this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just go up to our CodePlex site. You can download this file and use it in your applications today. We'd love to get feedback, like the Nokia 606 example.
Yeah.
We're not always 100%. Let us know.
So you'll take the feedback and issues and patches and stuff, and you'll do something with them.
Yeah, we plan to roll out updates to this file, but it'll be based on community feedback. So if somebody in the community is using this file and we've got something wrong, if you tell us, we'll do our best to update it and get a new release out.
Cool. And then where's the main place for mobile people to get into the live mobile platform?
Mobile.live.com.
Mobile.live.com.
Yeah.
Not m.live.com?
Can't remember. I think it's mobile.live.com.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Chris Rich, for talking to me today about mobile and making it better. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. I'll see you again next week.